scripture reading. We'll be reading from the passage from Luke chapter 7, verse 1 to 10. Please listen to the word of the Lord. When Jesus finished saying all this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. There, a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they plead earnestly with him. This man deserved to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, do not trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed." Verse 8, "For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel." Then the man who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. This is the word of God. Brothers and sisters, please be seated, and let's invite Reverend YC for the preach of the word today.
Good afternoon, church. I'm glad to be back here. How many of us have made constant prayer to God and petition for something that you feel very heavy or burden on certain things? It can be your own personal issue, can be the issue of the church, can be issue of your family, can be anything. I think as Christians we learn to pray. And even at the very beginning when you become being kind of the induction into Christianity in your own life, you realize that you make prayer. Like, you say, "God, come into my life. I want to believe you. You be my Lord and I be your son, your children." Right? So it is, the prayer is something that we utter almost daily to God. Okay, you always say your prayer of grace before meal. But in this particular passage, we're talking about bringing a petition to God. Means you have something that really burdens you and you want to bring to God. And not just bringing to God, and you want God to hear your prayer. You want God to answer your prayer. I'm not saying that I'll give you a formula that you can kind of, every time you copy, that it will work. But this is a prayer, a model that Jesus personally endorsed, personally commended on. So it's not just about a petition of faith, which we can see later on in the passage about the centurion, but it's also about a petition being granted. Not just petition granted, but with commendation. This is wonderful. You ask something from the Lord, and you get what you want, and God say, "Good job, very good. And I'm very pleased with you." Wow. Not just giving what you want, and at the same time, there was this commendation for the centurion as well. Now, when we talk about petition, there are a few things within this this gospel narrative you see that I just want to highlight three important things inside there, and you can reflect as you listen to the sermon. And what is that that's in my own, and check with your own personal petition or your personal prayer life. Is there any of this lacking? Okay, if not, praise God. If there's lacking, make some adjustment so that we can flow and we can fall into the will of God as you pray and have the assurance that He hears us and He answers us, right? So the first thing is that we need to examine our motive. Why do you pray? Why do you pray? Ask yourself, why do you pray? Most of us pray because we have a problem. We have something that we need to ask God, a favor to ask God, or something, problems that we need God to help us to resolve, or certain issues that we cannot handle, is beyond our power to change, and we want God to change that. And that's why often we bring this petition to prayer to God. So what is the motive for it? Now, let's look at this particular chapter, this Luke story, it is very important that we look at the motive, because the Bible clearly say, if you pray in the wrong motive, God will not answer our prayer. In James chapter 4, verse 2 and 3, it says that you desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but you cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask. So some of us, we do not have because we don't even bother to ask God, this one I fight myself. I just need to work hard, I can get money. I just need to study hard, I get a good grade. No need God, why prayer? Why prayer? Why pray for your exam, you know? I can. I just study hard, I'll get my A's. I don't need God, right? Verse 3 says that when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives. Or the King James Version, they say that ask amiss. Amiss means you're out of what it's supposed to be, all right? Out. Okay, you ask with wrong motive. Now, let's look at this centurion. What kind of motive does it come to God when he brings this petition across to God? Okay, the motive of it is love. Very simply put. Because what happened that this centurion has a servant, or to be very exact, is actually a slave, a bond slave, okay, which typically they bought. Okay, they bought the servant, and the servant's whole life was just dedicated to this master and served the master. All right. And this servant was a good servant, and the master liked him very much, but too bad. He fell sick and is about to die. So out of pity for this person, out of the love for this servant, this centurion heard of Jesus. Jesus happened to be around this area. And he heard about the story of Jesus. Okay, being a centurion, he's being sent, okay, by the Roman Empire, or by the Roman government, to kind of govern that particular area, to make sure that the Jews don't go on riot, you know, make sure they lead everybody there live a peaceable life, okay, peaceful life. So no riot, no hanky-panky thing going on, okay, all under the control of the Roman soldier. So the centurion is the commander that being sent to govern that place. So I'm sure he knows what's going on within the little town of Capernaum. So he heard of Jesus. It's not the first time entering Capernaum. He had performed miracles, he had healed people, cast out demons before. So he heard of it that Jesus is somebody who has a power to heal, the power to make miracles. So now my servant is sick. So if Jesus would able to come and heal, how wonderful would that be? But who am I to approach Jesus? First, Roman is being a Gentile, and Jesus is not even an official religious teacher. The Pharisees are, the Sadducees are, but not Jesus. And who are the people that followed him? All the Jews, right? And some of the Gentiles. But you, being a commander sent by the Romans, you are the Roman, you don't join in the crowd and follow Jesus everywhere Jesus goes. You don't do that. But he heard of Jesus. And because of his, I believe, because of the love for the servant, he wanted the servant to get well. So he pleaded with the elders and sent the elders of the Jews. So he had good relationship with the elders. He had good relationship with the people in power there, okay, within the religious circle. And then asked the elder, hey, can you go and approach Jesus? And I'll send my request. Can Jesus not take some time off and come and heal my servant? My servant is very ill and about to die. And what happened is that this life of love test, this centurion has this testimony in his life. Okay, in a very short passage, you can see that a few things are being highlighted. In the first thing, we know that, you know, the gesture is there, even though he didn't say he loved his servant, but you can see that it's a gesture of love because of concern. And he wanted the servant to be healed. And then when the elders came to Jesus, and when did the elder, the Pharisees or the religious leader, they brought this case up to Jesus. He says that this man deserved to have you do this because he loves our nation. This man deserves you do this. If somebody asks you to heal, you are not free, never mind. But this man is different. He deserves you to heal. Why? Because he loves the nation. He loves us, the Jews. He's a Roman. He doesn't come and oppress us. In fact, he loved us. How does he love us? He even helped us to build a synagogue. Wow. Does PAP help us to build our Agape Christian Church? No. But he, being a conqueror, he built the church, the synagogue for the people. And not just that, he get an elder's commendation. Means the elder know him. The elder knew him and know that this is a good man. This soldier is a good commander. And he commended, said, Jesus, please go. Very good man. He has some need. He has some problem. You must help him. And you realize that all this thing you have said, the motive, the love is always on other people. It's about the servant. It's about the Jewish. He loved the nations. It's about the Jewish practice that he built a synagogue. And he get good commendation. So I believe the elders are not easily fooled by this centurion, right? So over years, maybe, over months, he look at this person. Hey, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. He didn't come to kachow and make our life very difficult. So it's a testimony. So the petition out of love. So ask yourself, every time you pray, is it you pray out of love? I share with the pastors, the Presbyterian pastors, we have a exco meeting the other night, 2 weeks ago. So I was asked to share a short passage to kind of edify one another, you know, as pastors. And I told them this, as pastor, the first very important thing you must have is to love your people. You cannot love your church, you cannot pastor your church. Because we are hired, not hired to be a hireling. We are called to be a pastor. We are called to be a shepherd. So you don't have the shepherd heart, then you cannot be a pastor. You, regardless how good you are, how gifted you are, you just get disqualified. When Jesus asked Peter, do you love me more than this? Do you love me, Peter? Do you love me? The answer that Jesus gave to him is always the same. Feed my lamb. Tend my sheep. Feed my little lamb. Feed them. You take care of them. You don't love them how you take care. You ask a mother. Your mother don't love the child. He won't care for the child. He just leave the child. Anybody can take care of the child. But if the mother really loves the child, he will pay great attention to it. And he will put his life at stake even for the child's sake. All right? So you realize that the petition, the motive, is for others, for the benefit, for the welfare of others, or sharing the first service. Oh, you move into, you are in a department, suddenly there's a new colleague coming. This new colleague, Hanan Kawa. Yeah, very hard to work with this person. And then our prayer becomes, God, please remove him from my department. God, please remove him from my department. Then really, you know, after 6 months, whatever the reason is, he got transferred. Thank God for answering my prayer. It's for his good or for your good? The prayer is for my own good. I just want to have a good life in my department. I don't have problems, you know. So it's more for my comfort. Hard to deal with these people. Don't know how to work with this kind of personality of people. So the best is, you know, get out. Don't be in my department. But here is for the sake and the benefit and the welfare of the other person. Right? So the second thing that you realize that the posture of the petition or the petitioner is very important, and is humility. Okay? What's humility? First, the elder think that this centurion is worthy. Lord, he's worthy. Go to his house. He's a good man. He built synagogue for us. He loves our nation. So he do a lot of good things. Worthy. But you ask a centurion, are you worthy? He said, no, I'm not worthy. And how do we know that he's not considered himself to be worthy? He felt very unworthy. In verse 6, he said, as Jesus went with them, he was not far from the house of the centurion. And the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself. Don't trouble yourself. For I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. I don't deserve you to come under my roof. And he's a commander, you know. And he's in charge of this place. He has the legal right. And he can exercise his power to call whoever that he wants to come to his house. Even Jesus. He can, Jesus want to come, send 2 soldiers, bring Jesus to my house. Cannot. Can. But he never do that. He never exercise the authority in that way. He said, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come. I'm not worthy for you to come. Neither I consider myself worthy to come. This is very critical and important, okay? He realized that he only can put the request through another person, intercessor, maybe in the current term we like to use, the Pharisees to bring the request of petition to Jesus. Whether Jesus come or don't come is up to Jesus. His decision. It's Jesus' decision to come or not to come. He never coerced that Jesus must come. If not, I send a soldier and bring you here. He did not do that. Technically, he had the authority to do so. After all, he's a conqueror of the land, right? But the next thing I think is very good, very important for us, for the modern people especially, I think, that we have to learn about what is called reverence. Okay, I call this not overstepping or this holy distance. You realize that he says something like, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come to me. God, I don't deserve that you come to me. So, at the same time, I don't think that I'm worthy that I should come to you. You realize that? There's this distance. Often, especially after the Reformation, you read the church history, you realize that when we throw away all the icons and all the practices of the Catholic Church, we throw away a lot of some of these rituals, or some of the very meaningful things that are conducted in the service. And as a result, we can have church without cross. Thank God we still have a cross here. You go to a lot of church, no cross on. It doesn't matter. God is a spirit. Everywhere, God present. You know, we can worship anywhere. You want to come with short, also can. You want to do anything, you want to sleep like that and listen to sermon, also can. God don't look at your posture. God look at your heart. Come on. If what is really real in you will show forth. Just as something, the love is real in the person, in centurion, that he take the trouble to trouble the elders so that the elder can trouble Jesus to come to heal his troubled servant. This is how. Love finds its own expression. This is it. So sometimes we are so buddy-buddy with God. Oh, God, you're just my buddy friend. Remember, he's God. And we are his creature. In the Old Testament, very clearly, when Moses saw the burning bush, he wanted to go very near and see why this bush burning and not being consumed. And then there's a voice saying, stop there, stop right there. Don't come any closer. Otherwise you can burn out, you know. Don't come any closer. And then take off your shoe, you're on holy ground. Ooh, cannot be so near. Isaiah. When he saw the vision, oh, he said, I'm a man of unclean tongue. I'm living in the nation of unclean lips. Oh, I'm doomed. And then the seraphim take a tongue and take the live coal from the altar and then touch his lips and be cleansed. He said, I'm doomed because I'm in the presence of God. And today we enter the presence of God so frivolously sometimes that we don't even want to think twice. I didn't even need to. No, I don't have to come. How many of you really come before the Lord this morning? And before that you say, God, this is a holy place. I'm entering into this holy communion with you. Forgive my sin. Cleanse me. That in this service, I may offer to you my true sacrifice of praise and thanksgiving. How many of us take time to do that? Prepare for the service. We just walk in. We're walking in, still looking at the K-pop, you know. Oh, 不可以 lah. Okay, 关掉. Wow, you can just switch like that. This is our attitude. But look at the attitude of this. And by the way, the Romans are Gentiles. He'd never been to any synagogue. He was never taught by any rabbi. And yet he had this heart for God. And he know that, God, I'm not worthy, you know. But everybody say you're worthy. Everybody say you're good. I'm not good. I know that I'm not good. I'm not worthy for you to come, neither for me to go to you. That's why I send my friend. I send the elders. What does it show us? And this is the reverence that I think we need to develop and recapture in our own spiritual life. God is God, and we are men. And this thing, I think for Jesus, I guess he can feel it. No one really treat him that way. Everybody want to throng him, everybody want to touch his clothes, and this man don't even dare to come near him. And don't even want Jesus to come near. Remember, when Jesus performed the miracle of catching the fish, and then straight away, what did Peter's response at the Sea of Galilee? Depart from me, Lord, for I am a Sinner. Depart from me, Lord, for I'm a sinner. What have you to do with the catching of the whole load of fish? Because it's a miracle. No one can do that except God. If he is God, then I'm doomed. Just like Isaiah say, I'm doomed. So depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinner. You see, that kind of holy encounter will give us, will put us in our place. And we know how to what to speak and what not to speak. And how we should carry ourselves and our attitude before the Lord. Okay? Some sidetrack. Come back to this. So the basis of true faith is always humility. We just had a session earlier on with some of the youth. And somebody said, oh, the visitor was, wow, I'm trying to brag about her achievement and how popular she was, and people thronged to her for a word of prophecy. No. The true basis, the basis of true faith is always humility. Is Moses a man of great faith that commanded the 10 plagues upon the land of Egypt? Who else can do such thing besides Moses? But what is the description given to Moses? He is the meekest man, right? Jesus performed a lot of miracles. No one is like Jesus. When Jesus described himself in Matthew 11, he said, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Learn of me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. Or another translation, for I am gentle and humble. Moses, Jesus, great man, not God himself. And the manifestation of their faith is humility. So if anyone come to you and brag about all this, you know that this is a false prophet, a telltale sign that you can be assured of. All right? So the basis of true faith is always humility. The next thing is the quality of petition. The quality of your, what weight does it carry in your petition? If God were to weight our prayer with a scale, a spiritual scale, will we be found wanting? Not enough? Lightweight? Featherweight? What's the quality, what's the measurement you think that God will use? It is faith. With what measure of faith do you approach God? Okay? Because the centurion really believed. That's why he said to Jesus, he said he fully believed fully in the person Jesus and the authority of his word. He said that, I'm not deserver. I did not consider myself worthy to come to you, but say the word, Jesus. Say the word and my servant will be healed. Just say the word and it will be healed. There's authority. For I myself, he takes himself as an example. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go and he go. I tell that one, come and come. I tell this one, do this and do this. In other words, he had this understanding. I mean, this revelation of God. Many of us, until today, sometimes some of us do not have that. The authority of his word. How do you know whether this person has authority or not? How do you know? Again, let's be a quick, very practical test. How do you know this person? Yeah, he may have the position, but does he have authority? What does it mean? If a person has authority, his word is executable. Means his word can be executed by people. He asked the soldier, come, the soldier come. For example, a father in a house. The father asks the son, please go and fetch me a cup of water. If the father really have authority, the son will go. Wow, obedient. Boing ah. 自己倒了,你就惨了。明白吗? The authority means, in other words, your word is able to be executed in obedience by others. That's where you have authority. And this centurion know well. He said, if Jesus, first thing, if I don't believe he can do that, why I go and go through all the trouble the elders to do such thing? I believe, but he need not to come. Because if he is able to do it, he can do it over there. Don't have to come to my house and lay hand on my servant in order to heal. He can even, like today, pray over the phone and my servant can be healed. Don't have to be physically here. Just say the word. You see, the faith is in the person of Jesus. And because of that, He believed in the authority of the word. And then he believed despite of what? Not seeing. Have you seen all these things? Have you learned anything? Who is Jesus? Does he know? You ask this Jew, who is Jesus? He probably says, oh, he's a Jew's itinerant rabbi, maybe. I saw him in great trouble. I'm okay with him moving around in Galilee, in Capernaum. But if he's in trouble, I'm going to catch him. Right? This is the role of the centurion there. But he believed despite not seeing, and a very little knowledge about Jesus today. How much Bible verses you need to be convinced before you even believe in God? How much book you need to read in order to convince yourself that God is true, is living? And for this centurion, all that he had is he heard of Jesus. How many sermons have you heard? How many Bible have you read? How many times have you read the Bible? How many books have you read? Are you convinced? You can read all that you want. If you have come with an unbelieving and critical heart, you will not. But you can see the house of this centurion. You can just imagine what kind of experience he has with Jesus. Zero, probably. Everything is hearsay. And in spite of that, he developed such a faith and such a pure faith that amazed Jesus. And Jesus commended him and say that, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel. In other words, I find a faith in someone else, in a Gentile, someone outside the church, have faith greater than everyone else that's in the church, in the modern context. I found someone who have a greater faith. Jesus said, I found someone that will believe in me even more wholeheartedly, outside the church. Someone that know very little about me compared to the many, many that who sit around and know me for years and don't believe me. And this is it. Not by, despite of not seeing and the little knowledge that he has. I want to draw you to a few examples. The first one, the story of Naaman. Naaman was a Syrian general. He had this, he was a leper. So leprosy all over. So somebody told him that, oh, go to Israel, you know, they have these people there that are able to heal you. So he go to Elisha. So Elisha, when he arrived, Elisha did not come down, oh, the general of Syria, and come and kowtow to him. Never. In fact, he didn't bother even come out to meet him. He just sent his messenger and said, go and tell this guy, okay, tell him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. Just go and do it. Don't even bother to meet him. And then Naaman went away angry. Who am I? I'm the general of the Syrian army, you know. You pray. I thought that he would surely come out to me. This centurion, Lord, don't come. No, I'm not deserved for you to come. This one, hey, come to me. I swear to come to me and then stand and call to the name of your Lord, and then wave your hand, do over the spot, and cure my Lord. I do ritual like that. Maybe yao qi or what, pour a bottle of olive oil on you. Must do all these things. Ask you to lie down 4 minutes, stand up, jump 2 minutes. Do all the funny things, and then heal. You expect him to do such thing. Maybe this is what the Syrian, or some of those maybe their doctor, witch doctor did. So he had this impression that Elisha probably will do likewise. But our God is not like their God. Totally different. What do you expect God to do for you? According to the way that you expect him to? No. Then after that, he gets angry somehow. He said that, are not Abana and Fafa, the rivers of Damascus, better than this? Why must I do that? Today, we can ask the same thing. Why must we do that? Must I do that, man? Well, we can do like that also. No, our place, we can do that. Same thing. Why must I go to the river of Jordan? No, I'm proud of my country. These two great rivers in Damascus. But you realize that it's a contrast with the posture of the centurion. So you realize that three things are very, very prominent, okay, in this petition that stands out. Is that first, the motive of the petition is love. Love is about others. You pray for others. You have a bad colleague, you pray that he will move to another department. You have a neighbor that will drip the laundry from 13th floor on your 6th floor. You pray that he will move and stay in condo, maybe. Some good-hearted people. It doesn't move on because we just don't want trouble. It's all about me, me, and me. But here it's about the servant, it's about the Jewish, the nation, the synagogue, and he considered himself not worthy. Even everyone say that he's worthy. Posture of petition, and then the quality of petition. Faith. He has great faith in Jesus. That's why Jesus was amazed. Not amazed within the community of the Jews, but amazed with someone who does not belong even of the community, the Gentile, the centurion. So, it's not just a petition of faith, but a petition being granted with commendation. You don't score just A, you score A plus with certificate of merit, whatever, with good, with price. Okay? Now, that helps to preparing. I look back at our church vision and the 2XYY we're going to talk about later on. And this is the vision verse. Okay, all these are not new to many of us. We have seen this for many, many years. What is that? He says that in Matthew 9, he says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed, helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Why did Jesus want to go around? Because out of compassion, out of love. So when he prayed to God for these people, he prayed out of love. So this is the whole motive. The motive of our ministry, the motive of our prayer is love. We go to block 19 not because we want to fill the chest. We go to block 19 because we want to care and love them. At the beginning, we may not be fully into that. But the more we go, the more God pour his love into our vessel. And we can go there with greater mercy, with greater love for the people. You need to step up. 你要走出去. The motive is love. The second, the promise verse that we have, is it too small a thing for you to be servant to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I have kept? I will also make you a light for the Gentiles that my salvation may reach the ends of the earth. Who's doing that? He said, I will do that. I have kept. I will also make you that my salvation. He said, God is doing it, but God is willing to use us as a church to do that. Right? He's going to use us as a church. So who are we? There's so many other churches in Singapore that God can use. But if God so chosen us and then gave us this vision and want us to step out in humility and say that God, yes, if you have chosen me, I will not take a step back. I will not say no. When you know that you are unworthy and yet people call you into that position, sometimes you dare not reject the position because you know you can't. But you will step forward in fear and trembling, honoring the position and the call that has come to you. That's how it happened. It's always like that. A lot of reluctant leader, we call it. Humility. And then with that, you begin to rise and God will help us. Right? The posture of petition. The next one, the commission verse you talk about, Isaiah 54, it says that, enlarge the place of your tent and let the curtain of your habitation be stretched out. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your sticks. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your offspring will possess the nation and will the people the desolate cities. Have it happened yet? No, it has not happened yet. When this prophecy was given to Isaiah, it has not happened yet. This thing is like a picture like that. It's not happened yet. So you need faith to make it real. You need faith. So when you pray, say, God, this is what you ask us to do. Even if we don't see it, you have a third service. Oh, today, school holiday, less people come to church. In fact, two services is more than enough. We have enough seat to accommodate everyone. Is this about just having two services? Is this about having enough seats for people? Or is something that God has called us to step out to and we do not know? But we obey and we submit and believe in faith. So why I call 2X5Y a faith journey. It's not just about getting KPI done. It's not about filling up spaces. This will happen. That's why 2X5Y is never a goal, but only a signpost. That's the whole purpose. Because the goal is already given. You will be my witness until the end of the ages. That is the goal. But this is a signpost that God is leading us forward. So 2X5Y. Okay, just want to update. Since the last time I said that we're going to have a third service, and then you have done the survey, so I appreciate all of you that have responded to the survey, and some have, you know, and some have given your own thoughts and opinion about it. We really appreciate that. But the thing that, okay, because it takes time for us to process this, especially the committee, so there'll be some changes. I know that 1 o'clock is too late for many of you, and in fact, most of you don't quite like 1 p.m. So we try to make adjustment, and 8 a.m. is too early for the first service, so there may be some adjustment. So I really plead with you that, you know, give the committee and the leadership team some time to really, you know, massage through all this, and then we will come back with something that's feasible. But yet, it may not fit your schedule totally nicely, because where there is changes, there will be something that we need to adapt to. So I pray that all of us will embrace some good changes, that for the long haul, we will see the work of God being expanded through us. Right? So, to X55. So, is it a mission possible or a mission impossible? You decide. How do you respond? We'll make it different. The promised land is being promised even before they left Egypt. You know that? You read the Bible story, you know. The promised land is promised when they were still in Egypt. When Moses came, before the 10 plague even happened, Moses already told them. But did it happen immediately? Did all the people go into the promised land? You read the story, you know? No. It happened many, many years ago. And generation later, then it happened. Today, as this generation, and the call has come, what is your response? You think it is a mission possible or mission impossible? In closing, I just want to draw into one passage in Mark and later on in Matthew to close. And that is very critical. I want us to take this seriously. In Mark chapter 6, about Jesus' story, Jesus went back to his hometown. And Jesus left there and went to his hometown, accompanied by his disciple. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue. And Jesus, of course, teach with authority. He taught with authority and with wisdom and with knowledge. And the people were amazed at what they heard, right? And they begin to think, where did this man get this thing? How can Jesus talk like that? Who taught him? Have you been to school? Who is his teacher? You ask all these questions. What is this wisdom that has been given him? What are these remarkable miracles he's performing? No one can do this miracle. We heard so many of it. He healed all the sick, the lepers, the cast out demons. Who is he? And he began to entertain that, could he be God? Men cannot do such thing. We all know men cannot do such thing. But as a thing, the little faith creeps into them, and they continue. And then you hear this voice in your brain, and somebody in a crowd will say, isn't this the carpenter? Isn't this Mary's son? And his brother is among us, Joseph, James, and Judas. Aren't his sister here with us? Who is he? Mere man. Mere man. And they began to take offense at him. Who do you think you are? Men try to act like God, maybe perhaps. And Jesus said to them, a prophet, okay, I don't read. And the next verse, verse 5. He could not do any miracles there except lay his hand on a few sick people and heal them. Verse 6. He was amazed at their lack of faith. There's only two incidents in the Bible that Jesus was amazed. One is amazed at the faith of the centurion. Wow, I have such a great faith that I've not even seen in Israel. The other, he was amazed, is amazed at the lack of faith. You see, that nothing amazed Jesus. Not the sinful practice of the people, not the hardness of heart, or not the other thing that people do, but it's the lack of faith that amazed him. And there's a great faith that amazed him. So you know what God is after us as a church? What faith do you have? As a person, what faith do you have? Is God amazed at you, brothers, sisters, because of your great faith? Or was God amazed at you for your lack of faith? Even after seeing, after reading, after knowing so much thing, compared to the centurion who know little, see little, yet he believed in God. In Matthew chapter 8, which is a parallel passage to Luke 7 on this story of centurion. But he ends with one of these verses, which is a very sobering word. And he says, after saying that, oh, such a great faith that I have not even seen in Israel. Then, continue, Jesus said this in verse 11 in Matthew 8. I say to you that many will come from the east and the west and will take their places at the feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the subject of the kingdom will be thrown outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. What is Jesus telling them? Jesus turned and talked to all these. Who are these people? All the Jewish people, the Pharisees, perhaps some of the other people. In the context, who is the person that come from the east and west and take their place? A Gentile, a centurion that never knew who Jesus really is, yet believe. And all of you, supposedly the subject of the kingdom of God, you are here for ages, you don't believe who I am. That's why at the end, they crucified him. You say, then the subject, in other words, the disadvantaged one have gained the advantage. The advantaged one, those the subject of the kingdom, did not get it, did not believe. And they're being thrown out of the kingdom into the darkness where there's gnashing and weeping. Dear brothers and sisters, what kind of faith do you have today? When God called you, you always say, I'm no good, no good. Very unworthy. As I said, if you know what is grace, you can never reject the call. That's why in the Calvinistic theology, irresistible grace, you learn the term. This is what I mean. Irresistible grace. When grace of God comes, you will, with fear and trembling, just like Moses. I cannot even speak properly. Call somebody else. Until God so angry with him. Isaiah also said, cannot. I'm unclean lips. Jeremiah said, I'm a baby. I cannot. Be a prophet. Speak the word I give, put in your mouth. With what faith do you respond to God? So dear church, I just want to leave you. We are supposed to be the subject of the kingdom of God. We are born here, some of us, we become Christian for many years. Will we end up being thrown outside? Where else other people by faith have entered in? Because even here we are not believing. Believing in what God is going to do. And what God is going to do through us, in us, for His glory. 2X5Y is a small matter, I can tell. It's just a showcase. It's a show flat, I will tell them, show flat. Not the actual flat you live in, it's a show flat. But it's a show flat of the beauty and the glory of God. That's it. It's for Him, not for us. Right? So shall we just prepare our heart for communion and really think through what I've spoken to you today? With what faith do you approach and answer to God's calling?